Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Children are the greatest blessing, yet pose the most difficult challenges a parent will ever face. From the day a baby is born, it is a parent's job to meet physical and safety needs, develop trust, mete out discipline, build self-confidence, teach responsibility, inspire accomplishment, and always love unconditionally. It takes a great deal of effort to nurture a child from the cradle to the college dorm and beyond. How do we begin to tackle this monumental task, shaping our children into productive contributors to society who know their value as members of the body of Christ? My guest today, author Karen Brzezinski, has written a guide that addresses this very question. A mother of five children, Karen has drawn on personal experience and biblical truths to create her book entitled How to Build Children with Integrity. This 370-page book addresses many of the stumbling blocks parents face in raising healthy, well-adjusted, God-honoring children and offers practical and creative ways to overcome these obstacles. Good morning and welcome to the show, Karen.
Hi, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, Karen, it's such a pleasure to have you. As we were talking right before the show, I did get an opportunity to read through most of your book, and I was just so impressed with it. I wish I had had a book like that when I was raising my children.
Well, thank you. I know, and because I knew I needed a book like that, when I started raising my children, I decided to implement in strategies to help me to raise children that have character so that they would be equipped for the battles that they would be facing in their teen years, which I was sure would be many because statistically we all know those years can present challenges. And I realized that I wanted to get a manual for myself, and I always like to share what I work hard to do, so I wanted to put that out there to share with other young moms.
Well, it sounds like you did an excellent job of meeting that goal, Karen. Could we backtrack a little bit, though? I like to ask my guests, what influences in your childhood helped shape the person that you are today as a Christian, as a writer, even as a mom? Did you grow up in a Christian home?
I didn't grow up in a Christian home. Pardon me?
I say, did you grow up in a Christian home? Did you enjoy writing as a young person, or was that a talent that developed later on in your life, Karen?
No, even when I was a little girl, I loved people and I loved writing. In fact, in the day before copy machines, I was a little nerdy girl that would take the unbeknownst now Encyclopedia Britannicas in our home, and I would section off papers and individually write newsletters and go around the neighborhood and sell them so that I could share the interesting information with others. But I lived in an idyllic home. I know, I was so nerdy. I lived in an idyllic home. We were centered around giving extravagantly, loving and serving others. And it wasn't until later that we served Christ. We were teenagers, but my parents had both come from broken homes, and they were really intentional about giving us a very, very strong family life, and they were servants of others before they even knew Christ. So once we knew Christ, it was even more important for us to instill character and integrity in our children, you know, into children. One scripture that inspires me always is says, "Draw me, we will run after thee." And that's in Song of Solomon 1:4. It seems like ever since I was young, when I have information or wisdom or do a lot of work on something, there is no greater delight to me than just linking arms with others and equipping them with that information and wisdom.
Yes, exactly. Well, it sounds like you had a really interesting childhood and you were very blessed, Karen.
I was.
So you told us a little bit about what motivated you to – I can't talk this morning for some reason.
That's
about
okay.
What motivated you to write How to Build Children with Integrity. And like I say, I just found so many fascinating things in your book. One of the things that caught my attention first off, you mentioned the Eve syndrome. Share what that means.
I think the Eve syndrome is pervasive in so many different parts of our life. I call it the Eve syndrome because it's the same thing that presented itself to Eve. She was allowed to have all the trees of the garden, and she wasn't allowed to have one tree. And what her focus was that one tree she couldn't have. And I find that in our life, when we get our eyes off of what we have and we get our eyes onto the one thing that we don't have going for us or we don't have in our life, or maybe even that someone we love doesn't have in their persona, if we get our eyes off of what we do have, it just feeds so much ungratefulness. We, rather than controlling and manipulating others to be what we think they should be, we need to learn to love and appreciate people for who they are and in spite of who they aren't. And then we allow them to love us too with everything we are and we aren't. It also equips us to get our eyes off of that one tree we are prohibited from or we don't have, and to get our eyes on the many blessings that we do have.
I love that concept, Karen. And it kind of reminds me, and I cannot quote scripture like you and other folks can, unfortunately, but I believe it was Paul that said, and I think it was in 1 Corinthians, but don't quote me on that, where he talks about being content in all circumstances.
Yes, we have to learn that too. I think it's something that, you know, contentment can be learned. That's the good news. And it depends on what we're feeding ourselves. And in the book, I do have many strategies to implement more contentment in our lives. And that's what that whole book is about strategies so that we don't just stumble upon things. We purposefully and intentionally implement strategies to grow in contentment and in the other things that we need in order to live victoriously.
Absolutely. Well, Karen, parents tend to compliment their children all the time, whether it be complimenting their physical appearance or their performance in school or in a sports activity or whatever. But you have talked about complimenting children in much more effective ways. And I think you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, I'll give you a prompt or two. But if you would share with us what to you is effective compliments.
Well, it's so easy to focus on the external, but focusing on character compliments, it shows your children several different things. It shows them that you are watching who they are, not just what they look like. It also shows them that what is important to you, because the things that you're going to notice are the things that are important to you. And I really feel that instead of just saying, wow, you look pretty, you say, in fact, I just said this to a girl last night. I just met her and I said, boy, you aren't just beautiful. I can tell you're beautiful on the inside. And she looked up so startled. She said, that is such a nice compliment. Usually people tell me how nice I look. But just to hear that you can see I'm beautiful on the inside means even more to me. So that just goes to show you that when you compliment your children for playing well with their other sibling, for giving up something to share, for being kind in a situation where they didn't have to be kind or wouldn't normally be kind, I feel that that reinforces what's important to you, and it reinforces them to know what's noticed for them to be a person with character and integrity. Plus, you're constantly demonstrating that there's more important achievements than just what you look like.
Most definitely, and it helps them realize the characteristics that they really need to build rather than the pretty clothes and the appropriate makeup.
Right. I think it even goes beyond that, too, because a lot of times we reward our children or compliment them on their achievements. I feel we should even compliment them on the journey to the achievements, even if the achievement isn't won. For example, if they're trying to become the valedictorian and they're working and studying hard, we need to recognize that studying and that work, regardless of whether they achieve that ultimate goal, because we want to show that the most important achievement isn't just winning the prize or getting to the top or finishing first. It's the attitude and morals that you're developing that are even more lasting in the process.
A case in point with that in my life right now, Karen, is my granddaughter playing volleyball. She's a junior in high school, and the team has not won as many games as they would like this season. Mm-hmm. But after every game, we usually have a little cheer, chant, whatever you want to call it, that says, "We are proud of you." And we are. We're proud of
That's
the girls.
Awesome.
We're proud of the way they played. We're proud of the effort they put out. We're proud of the teamwork that they demonstrated. So we want them to know that even though they may not have won on the scoreboard, to us, they're still good players, and we appreciate their effort. So, yeah, I see what
exactly.
You're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was interesting when you said that we as parents should not share our child's flaws with others, for example, with teachers, with other parents. Why is that?
I feel that friends and family are such a positive part of your support team while you're raising your children. First of all, if you start rehearsing your child's lapses or flaws with others, it's showing them back to that Eve syndrome. We're focusing on who they aren't rather than on who they are. Second of all, we know that it is in the power of the tongue to bring life or death. We choose. And we're almost bringing the death to their character by just reinforcing and giving more words and more power to their lapses. Secondly, if you start to tell your child's lapses to friends and family who are coming alongside of you to raise strong children, they're going to start looking at your child from the lenses of the flaw that you've told them about. For example, if you tell them, "Oh, Susie doesn't share. She just is so selfish. She just never shares. I'm having a big problem with her." And then they have Susie over. They're looking at her like she doesn't share. And what you are looking for, you will find. And if they're looking for something and little Susie grabs a toy, they're going to think, "Oh, she's not sharing. That's just what her mom said." They're going to run in and they're going to overcorrect and overemphasize a situation that could have just been something in passing that they're assuming is illustrative of the character flaw that the parents described. I think instead, there's nothing wrong with saying, "You know, Susie's working on being a leader, and so a lot of times that makes her want to just kind of take over in the kids' room and just be in charge." And that is a nice way of saying, you know, she is, you know, liking to assert authority. And asserting authority is different than being selfish. But that way, when they look at your child, they're looking at her as more of a leader and seeing how they could round those corners out rather than looking at her as someone that isn't willing to share.
Very good points. That's excellent points, Karen. I like that. And I think
we do
tend to...
And what you say in front of your children, they're going to live up to what you think of them, too. So a lot of times, even in the areas where my children were weak, and I go into this in detail about the book, I would say things like, my one daughter wasn't being very kind, and she was always afraid of things. And so what we started to call her is kind and courageous. My one little girl was always complaining, and I started to call her happy. And it's calling those things that be not as though they are and bringing out a point in their personality that's maybe recessive because of another part of their personality. But it's teaching them and emphasizing the part that you want them to grow in. And by them hearing that, they start to focus more on it. You start to bring credit for when you do see those little things shining through, and they can grow in the areas they're weak in instead of rubbing their face into those areas.
That just sounds like such excellent thinking, Karen. I really like that. And it's interesting that we don't think that way. We don't tend to think that way. I think our first thought is, "Oh, I need to make such and such aware that they need to really watch this in my child, and that's not the way we should look at it at all. So I really
right.
like your way of approaching that issue.
Thank you.
Heroes are an important part of a young person's life, especially young children. What types of heroes should we encourage our children to respect?
I think heroes should be strong role models. I know that hero is a big word, for that little four-letter word has big connotations. The people that we admire, we want to emulate. We want to be like them. I think it's important that our heroes are heroes because they have integrity and they show you what courage or sacrifice or honor looks like. They live with purpose and they live with self-sacrifice. A lot of times give you examples to follow. I think heroes are so important. I even believe that there are so many real-life heroes around us. I always called my children's attention to what I call real heroes, the firefighters, people who deny themselves to help others. We're big on reading biographies or explaining why their grandpa's a hero or why the people that raise handicapped children, we would even go up to them and encourage them, say, you are such a hero, coming alongside and helping your child to do the best they can in a wheelchair. But I feel it's really important what your child looks up to and who you emulate and extol, because your child will want to be like them. I feel a lot of people are putting actresses or actors or sometimes pop singers on heroes list to their children, and then they're disappointed if their children try to go that way because personally those people might not be as heroic in their lifestyles as a hero that you'd like your child to emulate. So I feel
sure.
that heroes are important. In fact, I have to tell you, last month I had a little, my great nephews came over and I had my little grandsons over and we had a hero party. So we had a Batman come, you know, got young man dressed up as Batman, and I made sure to tell him what's in the book, that you make sure that you bring out who you are and your power is never used for bad. It's always to help people. And boy, when he was going through that routine with them, their eyes were big as saucers. They had wanted to do everything he did with his little games that he was playing with them. But when he was telling them to use their power and their strength for good, their eyes were big as saucers, taking it all in.
Very, I bet you that was neat to see, Karen.
It was precious.
Yeah, I don't know if you have, where you live, if you have this ad, but we have an ad for an insurance company out here, and these two little boys are talking, and the one little boy says, my mom's a superhero. When people lose their things in a tornado or a flood, my mom rushes in to save the day, and she makes sure that they get all their things back.
Oh, that's
boy,
great.
His eyes are just like saucers, you know, and the mom comes along and takes her child, you know, and she says, everything okay with your friend back there? And he says, yeah, he's just never seen a superhero before.
Oh, see, that's a good commercial.
It's an excellent commercial because they capitalize on that concept of heroism in such a cool way. I just love those little ads.
So and, that is know. Precious.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. So it's nice to see advertising that actually does capitalize on something good anymore, because most of it just appeals to things that are, you know, are not that much to be emulated.
Exactly. That's why we have to work extra hard.
Exactly. I feel like writing them and saying, good job, your commercial. I don't
right.
have insurance, but your commercial is excellent.
Right.
Well, Karen, if you would also share with us, again, I got these things out of the book. These are things that just popped out at me. You taught your children, you said, that to be good leaders, they must first learn to follow. Explain.
Well, you know, we're all leaders. We can, I remember once I was driving and I went the wrong way around a median. And much to my surprise and Actually, I was kind of disappointed. Three cars were going right behind me.
Oh, no.
So I realized that people are following us. And it's amazing how many times I've received letters from people that literally told me that years of them just watching me, just that they had learned so much, just the way that I lived with my children. But it's important that we teach our children that people are following them. For good or for bad, they have a powerful influence. I believe our influence is clearly repeated so often in Scripture. It says those things that you've heard and seen and me do, and people are looking, they're listening, they're watching. But before we want them to follow us, we want to make sure we're going the right way. And that's why Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. And the best leaders know that they have to be going the right way before they want people to be following them. And I think it should kind of shake us up a little bit, because if we know people are following them, we want people at the end of the day to say that their lives were better and that we pulled greatness from them, and not that they were the worst for hanging out with us. We made a big deal about influence in our homes because we wanted our children to realize that what we do and how we behave, it impacts the world. We are God's epistle to be known and read by all men. And people will follow you whether you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing.
Yeah, sadly, that's very true.
It is.
Well, a thought came to my mind as you were speaking, Karen. I have a friend who is in a position where she keeps moving up in the hierarchy of the particular career choice that she has made. And when she went to apply for a higher position, and of course they ask you, why are you the best person for this position? And she said, because I have been in this lower position for X number of years now, and I have followed those who are higher than me, and I have learned how to do my job with excellence by watching these other people. And now when I reach this higher level, I'm going to be able to supervise these lower people because I've been doing this for so long and I've been watching other people supervise me. And it's kind of
excellent.
Like, yeah, you know, you have learned from the people that are above you, and now you are ready to take that position, but you are also ready to supervise these people because you've done that job yourself and you know how it's supposed to be done, and you're going to find out why it's not being done that way if it's not, you know? So, and
excellent. So. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right,
and I
that's
think
great.
We have to learn that you can't start out at the top. You have to start out at the very bottom and follow the people that already know the ropes, know the policies, know the structure. So, yeah,
exactly.
I like that concept.
Thanks.
Talk about the importance of, I like this too, training your children versus watching them. And at what age should a parent begin to train a child?
I think we train children the minute they start crying. I really believe that there are some things that we can train our children before we even are aware of it. And that's part of my heart in writing the book, because I wanted to share with my children, and actually upon their request, I wanted to share with them the strategies that I implemented when they were younger so that it would assist them in training their children instead of just watching them. So even when they're younger, we can train them to be strong in character. For example, even by the way you make your baby cry, we can teach them to be bolder in expression by not just going when they whimper, but making them give a little healthy cry before you attend to them, because we don't want to just teach them that they have to just be all quiet, that we're going to run over and pre-anticipate. We want to teach children that are going to command attention and be leaders. We're going to have to train some of the character attributes very young. We can train a toddler to be honoring because they're not allowed to go mess up with their sibling's Lego project. That's teaching your children character when they're really young. So a lot of times we don't realize what we're training. And I believe this is one of the problems with parenting. A lot of parents are doing the right things, but the way that they're doing it isn't utilizing the things that they do in a way that their children can understand that would build character. For example, you can be on time for every game as a parent and bring your child to be on time for the games. But if you don't explain to your children, even at junior league, that you say, we have to be on time because that's showing respect for other people's time. We don't want people waiting for us. We set a time, and us dilly-dallying isn't more important than that team waiting for us. So in order to consider others' time is more important than our own, we're going to get there a little bit earlier, anticipate delays in the road. So just by explaining what's behind the action becomes a more suitable training than just getting your child to the game on time.
Yes, exactly. I know one of the things that my husband and I did, or I should say didn't do, I guess, with our children when they were little, we never gave them a bottle at night because we just thought that was something that one more thing we would have to break them of, you know? So in a way, that was
right.
Kind of a training that, hey, you know, once you go to bed.
Right.
All those little things
they're teaching them.
And that worked out well for us. I don't know if it worked out for everyone, but.
That's right, because everyone's got their individual children, and that's the beauty of some of these things is that you can just use the material and design it towards your children right where they're at with their strengths and their weaknesses and their gifts and talents and the things that they are and the things that they aren't. These things can be used for every single child and used to develop strategies for them individually.
Yes, exactly. Well, Karen, I think this is about time that I'm going to take a little break, kind of a station identification, if you will. We have folks that come into the radio show that don't know what they're listening to or who they're listening to. So I would like to identify to listeners that you are this morning listening to Step Into the Light right here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Patty Sheen. I am very thrilled to have this morning guest Karen Baczynski, who has written an excellent book called How to Build Children with Integrity. We have been discussing some of the points that she brings up in her book, and we are going to continue to do that. She has some wonderful, wonderful advice for parents on how to raise children that are responsible, that are God-honoring, that are going to be productive contributors to society. And I can't recommend this book enough. I will have information on my website, which is Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com, as to how you can acquire the book. Also, if you did come into the middle of the show, or you'd like to listen to it again, or you would like to refer it to friends or family, it is available on archive at, once again, the website that I just mentioned, PattiSheene.com. You will also find on that website Karen's website and her social media outlets as well. Just go to PattiSheene.com, and there's a Blog Talk Radio tab at the very top. And when you click on that, it will give you a list of all the shows that we have recorded to date. And below whichever show, you click on more information, and that will give you more information about my guest and also, once again, their social media outlets. So let's get back to our interview here with Karen. Karen, as you know, the premise of this show is to talk about dark times and how a person found their way back to light. Or we sometimes have guests who come on and talk about their ministry and how their ministry leads others back to light. And you definitely, parents can experience some pretty dark times.
That's right.
This book definitely, I think, would be a wonderful, wonderful way to lead people out of that darkness and back to light. But I'd also like to ask you, was there a time in your life when you were just really in the shadows and things were very, very tough and You felt like you were in the midst of a dark time, and how did you find your way back to that light?
Well, in 2013, in January, my dad had passed away from Alzheimer's after a long battle with it. And then on the 4th of July, I was four-wheeling up north at my cabin with my daughter and my younger sister. And my younger sister was killed when she didn't see a chain barrier, and it broke her neck and threw her off the four-wheeler, leaving the four-wheeler crashing
Karen.
With my daughter on it. It was catastrophic. My sister and I were as close as two sisters could be. We were 7 years apart, and she just idolized me, and I was just her mentor in life and everything. And that week, my husband and I and my daughter were supposed to be out of the country on missions trips. My husband and I in Peru, and my daughter was heading up a medical missions trip in Honduras. She's a dentist, and she headed up all the missions in Honduras that year. And I believe at that point, it was just crazy, because it was a good thing that the first thing that had already been established in our lives was that eternity is real and this world is not our home. So I
yes.
think that being our foundation, I felt like I was still in a little raft in the middle of an ocean being hit by a tsunami. And the most prevailing thing that I kept my focus on, though, was that I have an anchor, and my anchor holds. My daughter as well, we grabbed hold of that anchor. In fact, my whole family did. And Jesus, he is the anchor of our soul, and he's there when you have lost someone or any kind of trouble or darkness in your life. If we allow his super on our natural, you can go through, not with the Eve syndrome, but rejoicing and being grateful for the years you had with your sister. And it helps you put grief in perspective, and you can move forward. We had 2,500 people at the one-day funeral for my sister because she was so loved. And we all linked arms, and we moved forward. And even with her three young girls, we all purposed together to know that we have set before us every day life and death, and that we would continue to choose life and not get caught up in the death, but be caught up in gratitude for what we had and not in sorrow for what we weren't able to have.
Well, I'm so sorry that you experienced such a loss, Karen. It's got to be very difficult,
but
it sounds like you handled it with the one hope that we do have.
Yeah.
And something you said triggered a memory for me. I lost my husband back. It's been a little over 2 years ago now.
Oh,
and,
sorry. That's bad.
Thank you. And I'm in a group of support ladies. But I ran into a friend the other day, and I just happened to mention to her, I said, you know, we have a man in our church who has been married for close to 60 years. They're in their 90s. And she lost her husband too. And she said, I hear that and it makes me so angry, because I wonder why other people get 60 some years and I only got whatever she had, 25 or 30 or whatever, with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of looked at her and I said, and I look at it the exact opposite. I said, I'm so grateful for the 39 years that I had with my husband compared to people I know that get maybe only five. You know, so I thought that was kind of interesting, the different perspective that we have. And once again, it goes back to that, to a degree, to that Eve syndrome of you're bemoaning what you don't have instead of being grateful for what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that
affects
our whole perspective on everything that happens in our lives. Well, thank you for sharing that with us, Karen.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Yeah, you're so true. My mom always said, because look, she lost her husband that year. They were married almost 60 years, and she lost her little girl. And my mom, she always tells me that the only thing that will make grief go to the back seat is if you put gratitude in the front seat.
Oh, I
and
love that.
And even though you'll always miss that, like you said, I've seen people handle the death of their children. And if you aren't able to be grateful for what you had, you will never be able to move forward.
That's exactly true. Wow, I really like that. I'm going to write that down.
Mm-hmm.
Grief in the back seat, gratitude needs to be in the front seat. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that. Well, push grief in the back.
So
it'll still be there, but it'll be in the back seat.
Send that to me so I'll get it right. I'll share that with our hospice support group that I still attend, our hospice grief support group. Not so much that I need it, but we've just become really close friends. So we enjoy getting together once a month. But I don't want to get sidetracked here. Now that we have brought, which I'm thrilled that we have brought God and Jesus into our conversation, it kind of leads into the rest of my interview questions here. Karen, what are some of the ways to teach children about troubleshooting people problems in the family, and how does this give them their perspective on their membership in the family of God?
Well, each family, again, has all their wrongs committed, forgiveness required, and misunderstandings to break through. I have a whole chapter, actually, that's devoted to being perfectly joyful in an imperfect world with imperfect people. We have to learn that. My dad said, you have to eat a lot of gravel to keep a family close. And I think that's true for all relationships and church relationships. You need to learn how to work through those things. And you can expect the disagreements, the ups and downs. And you have to give people a chance. They have to learn and grow. You've got to give people the ability to change their minds or even to be wrong without changing their minds or to have a different opinion than you. But I believe that every person in the family has to learn to be, know that they are loved without, you know, whatever their blips and bloopers are, whatever their performance is, whether they're good, bad, or ugly, they're loved at their home. And I think that the quickest way God lets us to know who he is by living in community. All the gifts of the Spirit are given for you to work through trying relationships. I mean, what else is long-suffering for? That's a gift that God gives us. So gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance, those things are all in the face of opposition, aren't they? So I think God gives us the gift to be able to get through the opposition in relationships so that we can enjoy marathon relationships. And he also said that by the way that we love one another and learn to love one another, as he has loved us with all our blips and bloopers, we show the world the proof of his love. I love that, don't you?
It's like, yeah, most definitely, yeah. Especially with all my blips and bloopers that I have.
That's right, and he still adores you, and you still adore your children when they're not exactly, you know, making every decision correctly. But I believe that we have to do strategic things to teach and train our children to work through relationship problems so that they can become effective at doing it. We have to build a strong sense of humor in our family and build closeness and understanding by making special memories and handle little annoyances well, and that'll give you more stepping ground for handling the bigger ones well. Look at your communication style and love fiercely. Take 1 Corinthians 13 and implement it strategically and purposefully and believe it. You don't have to force yourself on others. Love isn't me first. It doesn't fly off the handle or keep score of sins. Start to really talk about living that out in your family and train your eyes to see the good in others and become an expert at forgiveness. Keep growing spiritually. The more you grow spiritually, the more love you're going to have for others. There's one little thing I say that people love to learn, and that is to learn when to shut up and learn when to speak up, because it's easier to shut up than to sweep up. So I think that if we remember that, when we remember or hear ourselves saying something that doesn't need to be said, just learn to stop talking and be more mature. So I think there's a lot of little things. We have rules of war. I mean, they have rules of war in international warfare. Develop some rules of war within your family, things that you won't do when that adrenaline's pumping. We're not going to go below the belt. We're not going to bring back past instances. Sit down and make a little paper and list 5-10 rules of war for your family before anything gets heated, and that way you can go back to that. I think your home needs to be a safe place, and people and your home should be learning about successful relationships right inside of that home. And we have to just teach our children to love at home.
I love all those concepts that you just shared, Karen, and you're absolutely right. And another thing I've learned too over the years in many different situations, not just within my family, but within my church and different organizations and things, learn to pick your battles. What are you going to mm-hmm. win and what are you going to lose?
Right.
Over haggling over something that in the long run just, you know,
yeah.
isn't all that
in
important.
In the long run, that issue probably isn't as important as the relationship. If you can keep that
right.
in perspective, you'll be willing to drop a lot more things.
Yeah, yeah. And I love another little, I think actually my granddaughter posted it on Facebook, to be honest, is where I saw it, and it said something about if it's not going to matter in 5 years, don't let it bother you for more than 5 minutes.
I love that. That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yes. Karen, how can we teach children, and I love some of the examples that you used in your book. That's why I brought up this question. How can we teach children to think and act beyond their own desires, putting others first?
Well, that is a pretty expansive question because I believe there's a lot in that question. But I think the
first thing... There's a lot in your book about it, too.
I know. That's why there's a whole chapter in my book even devoted that you can make a difference in your world and how to do that, because I think it starts with the under-the-surface things that motivate us. And the first thing we need to teach children and train children is something we rarely do, and we don't even exercise it enough in our own life, and that's to deny ourselves. None of us really wake up and say, okay, how can I deny myself today? But yet we know as Christians that if we don't deny ourselves daily, we're not even worthy of Him. So we should be embracing and looking for opportunities to deny ourselves. And we should be training our children at early ages. Because really, you can't put others first unless you are good at denying yourself. And so I believe that that's why Jesus emphasizes that we have to be willing to deny ourselves daily. So when you can train your children to be givers instead of takers, it will actually change the structure of their brain to make them more joyful, more content. It will make patterns in their brains that will make them more consistent in giving. But you want to have giving as a lifestyle. I think it's hard because when you first get your child, you want to give them everything. And then
sure.
all of a sudden they're teenagers and you thought they'd learn to give by taking, and instead they're professional takers. We have to let them learn to give by learning the joys and how-tos of giving. So we have to learn to put something in, not even if we can't do a lot, we have to learn the value of doing a little. We have to learn to communicate so we can give, because a lot of things that we give are words to be used effectively. I think that you have to make time in your schedule to give and balance the time that you spend on child-centered things and their own activities and doing things for others. I think you have to address hindrances, and I go through many hindrances. I mean, we always say, well, we're not together enough to give, or it's embarrassing because our children are unpredictable, or we don't even have enough ourselves, or there's not enough time. But I mm-hmm. believe, too, that God told us that what we give will be given back to us in good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over. So we have to learn to give in our lack, whether it's time, resources, or money. So I feel that giving is a lifestyle. It's just where you make people your focus instead of things. Help your children to know that they have something to give and focus on it and make opportunities for them to give and make some things intentional and make it fun. We had chain links, and we would put each child had a different color. And if they did something for someone, we'd write that thing that they did on the little color link, and we would make a big chain link all around our house for every summer. And it was really fun to see the kids real excited to do things for others so they can add to the link.
Oh, how fun. Yeah, that sounds really neat. And Mm-hmm. And I think, too, we have to realize that not only do we have material things to give Karen, but we have talent. Our children have talent. I mean, some kids love to get up and do little skits, or they can sing, or they can tell stories, or they can even read to other people. And these are things that don't require any money. Yes, time, but they don't require any giving of money or that kind of thing. So, yeah, you brought up some really excellent examples in your book that I very much enjoyed. So,
thank you.
Yeah. Well, Karen, we've all made bad choices. We know, unfortunately, that our children are going to do that as well. But you had an excellent chapter where you talked about some of God's re-words and how they can be used to teach our children can move forward despite those bad choices. Speak to that for us.
I love God's re-words. I think it's because I needed them so much in my life. But I love that he loves to restore and repurpose. And I just look at so many of the people that he brought out in Scripture that he used are people that needed repurposing or restoration. And they needed to see the way that God looked at them because of the lapses in their life. People like Gideon and Moses and David in Rehab and Hosea seeking out Gomer despite her failures. I love God's redeeming love. It is so powerful. I know when I was moving, I had an old table and chairs, and I asked my 5 married adult children if they wanted it, and they just took a look at it and said, no, that's ugly. And I looked at it, and I saw the potential, and I had a friend come over and repurpose that set, and now every one of my children want it back. But I'm telling you, knowing that we can get through mistakes and be a recipient of God's rewards, help us to live in the glorious freedom of what God's given to us rather than beating ourselves up for our failures. And we need to give our children that freedom to know that your mistakes don't define you. Even the things that you've messed up that happened to you, keep them in the past. I've worked through a few situations with a couple people recently, and things that they've really had things happen to them that disappointed them, or things that they did that they were disappointed in and they couldn't move forward. And mm-hmm. my challenge is go get a calendar out and circle the day and circle the year and leave it in the past, because don't allow the things that you've done in the past to rob you of God's present that he has for you of today, and to rob you of the future plans that he has for you, those plans that are for good and not evil, to bring you to an expected end and for you to leave those things behind and go from glory to glory to glory. We have to learn to do that. We have God's promise today and tomorrow and for our future. Don't let that past come up and ruin you, because you cannot drive down the road looking in that rearview mirror. And God, and I capitalize on all the rewords in Scripture, and God has restoration, repurposing, and redemption for us when we look to him.
Most definitely, yes. And isn't that wonderful that he does?
Mm-hmm.
We'd all be in a mess.
I know.
Karen, we're about at the end of our time, unfortunately. I could probably talk to you easily for another 2 hours here, but I would like to ask you, is there any other, you've brought up so many wonderful points, but is there any other one thing that you kind of wish I had asked or that you would like to share with listeners before we close out the show this morning?
Well, maybe one of the things that I would like to say is to, maybe what I wanted in my vision for this book is I really want to encourage people to get together and to have more face-to-face interaction. Maybe the young moms can get together and take the book and the workbook and challenge each other and add their own ideas to the mix and really develop and implement strategies in training their children. Maybe some of the people that are working with children can get together and use the materials to be a springboard for them. I really encourage the community of working together and developing these strategies and making the most out of the time with training your children. I think that with good people that are looking to grow as people, it's wonderful when they get together. I've seen the most benefits from my first book on marriage relationships. I've seen the most benefits when people get together and do it as a group. I just feel that that synergy that's created is sometimes lacking in our Facebook communities where we can stay at home and do, you know, some churches even do church by computer. So I think it's so important that we get together and utilize the strengths that each person has in a group to build on and develop strategies so that we can raise a powerful next generation.
Yes, exactly. And I see a question that I missed here that I wish I hadn't, but I can kind of almost state it in a statement now because of what we've talked about. One of the things that I think your book emphasizes, Karen, is that in today's society, when so much evil has come to be accepted as good, in this book, you help teach parents how to teach children to know the difference between what is evil and what is good.
Right.
And that's, I just really, like I say, I just really enjoyed the book, and I wish I had had it 35 years ago.
Well, thank you, Patty. That's so honoring. Thank you very much.
And I did want to emphasize to listeners as well that not only does she have some wonderful chapters here, here's an example of a couple, doesn't always have to be about me. I can deny myself. I can expend efforts. But she also has 1, 2, 3, 4, about 7 appendices at the end of the book that talk about the parables of our lives, powerful ways to develop spiritual strength in our children, church mentorship and mentoring. So this book is just packed with wonderful, wonderful information. So I can't recommend it highly enough to our listeners. Karen, I would like to thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your heart. It's obvious that you have a love for children and you have a love for parents, and you want to instill in them the desire to raise children who are going to be, as we talked about, productive members of society and to know their value as members of the body of Christ. And I just want to thank you for your time this morning.
I can't thank you enough. It's been a privilege to be on your show. Thank you, Patty.
Oh, may God bless you. Listeners, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. I want to remind listeners to go to pattysheene.com. That's PattySheene, and there you will find Karen's show. You will also find information about how to connect with her, how to order her book, and you'll find information about our other shows. So until next time, God bless you.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit